What if the secret to fighting extreme poverty meant intentionally leaving the bulldozers parked
Right.
and, handing out shovels instead?
It sounds totally backward, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But today we are doing a deep dive into a 2011 South African policy document, the Expanded Public Works Program Guidelines.
Specifically for KwaZulu-Natal.
Right, KwaZulu-Natal. And our mission today is to unpack how a government literally engineered job creation by changing how infrastructure is built.
And the scale here, I mean, it was massive. In just one financial year, they targeted 20,836 full-time equivalent jobs.
Which is a huge number.
It is. But, to clarify, full-time equivalent doesn't mean 20,000 people were handed permanent lifelong careers.
Oh, okay.
It means they generated enough total hours of paid work to equal that many year-round positions.
Oh, I see. So they strategically spread those hours out across way more people.
Exactly. Potentially tens of thousands of individuals.
By using labor-intensive construction, which to me, it's a bit like deciding to hand whisk a cake instead of using an electric mixer.
That is a great analogy.
Right. Like it takes way more people, but everyone gets a slice of the economic pie.
Yeah.
But I do have to push back here.
Sure.
You can't just hand thousands of people shovels to build a modern road and expect the same results. Like, doesn't substituting machines with hand tools just completely sacrifice efficiency and quality?
Well, you would naturally assume so, but the policy actually anticipates that exact concern.
Really?
Yeah, this wasn't just some blanket mandate to abandon technology everywhere. It was highly strategic.
Okay, so how did it actually work?
The guidelines require this approach only where it is technically and economically feasible. There is like zero allowance for reducing normal quality standards.
But what does feasible actually mean on a real muddy construction site?
It means setting strict physical limits. For example, the source highlights that human labor is substituted for machines strictly for tasks like excavating trenches under 1.5 meters deep,
Oh, got it.
or building low-volume roads that see fewer than 500 vehicles a day.
So if it's a massive superhighway,
You bring in the machine.
but if it's a local access road, use local hands.
Exactly.
Okay, so the work is physically manageable. But who actually gets prioritized for these jobs? Because if you rely entirely on manual labor, that usually just defaults to young, able-bodied men.
And that is exactly the default they wanted to break here. The policy mandates strict employment targets. Like 60% of the wage expenditure must go to women.
Wait, wow. 60% in heavy construction?
Yep.
That is a massive shift for a traditionally male-dominated field.
It really is. They also mandated 20% for youth, between 18 and 35, and 2% for disabled persons.
Hold on. How does a disabled person safely participate on a labor-intensive construction site?
Well, the policy accounts for that by requiring project managers to identify specific tasks,
Like what?
like administrative roles, site security or tool management, things that can be safely performed by people with disabilities.
So everyone gets a chance to earn the baseline minimum wage.
Right, which was set at 60 South African rand per day. And while that's modest, especially by global standards in
Right.
a high unemployment region, it provided a crucial, reliable economic floor.
Speaking of physical limits, there is a detail in this text that absolutely blew my mind. It involves the actual building materials.
Oh, the concrete elements.
Yes. The policy legally caps the weight of manufactured concrete elements, like manhole rings, at exactly 320 kilograms.
Right.
And it's specifically because that is the maximum weight four workers can conveniently carry together without a crane. It's like the ultimate government-mandated ergonomic team-building exercise.
It really is. And it's such a profound detail because it highlights a massive paradigm shift. They aren't just changing who digs the dirt.
They're changing the actual supply chain.
Exactly. They are forcing civil engineers and manufacturers to completely rethink things. When you redesign urban planning and materials around human limits rather than the capacity of heavy machinery, you integrate job creation into the very fabric of the infrastructure.
That is just brilliant. But it brings up a huge logistical issue for me. What happens when the road is finished? Do these workers just go back to square one with zero income?
If they did, the program would be a failure. The framework is designed as an income stepping stone, not a permanent career.
Okay, so how do they prevent that cliff edge at the end of a project?
The policy includes mandatory formal training, which is fully funded by the Department of Labor.
Oh, nice. How much training are we talking about?
Workers get a minimum of 2 days of formal training out of every 22 days worked.
Oh, wow.
So a short 3-month stint guarantees at least 6 days of training. and contracts over 4 months mandate 10 days.
So they actually walk away with something tangible.
Exactly. The explicit goal is to provide an exit strategy, teaching them skills they can translate into, you know, setting up their own micro-businesses or securing future employment once the infrastructure is complete.
So it builds the road and it builds the resume.
Perfectly said.
So for you listening, next time you see a highly mechanized construction site, you know, with just a few people operating massive machines, consider how a different approach could turn that project into a lifeline for the community.
It really makes you wonder about other industries too.
Yeah, which actually leads me to a final thought for you to mull over. If we applied this human labor over machinery logic to today's tech-driven world.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Which digital tasks can we intentionally, you know, hand-build to solve modern unemployment?
Yeah.
Maybe swapping our digital bulldozers for shovels is exactly what we need.